All right. So welcome to our January Public Health Advisory Council meeting. And I want to welcome everyone to our meeting. And I hope you had a chance to enjoy the lovely dinner from Blue Door Bakery. And if you've had some and want seconds, help yourself. There's lots to go around. So feel free to help yourself as you wish during the meeting, too. So if you have a little and you have a rest, and you need to have another little bite, help yourself. We're going to start with the roll call. And tonight, our icebreaker is going to be an activity one, where we're going to get up and move around a little bit. So we'll move through roll call on a few things, so some of you that have food in front of you can finish your meal and it doesn't get cold. And then we'll move on to the icebreaker. So when I call your name, we don't have a question tonight, so because we're going to do something a little different. So, all right, so let's go through here. Chad Williams.
Here.
And welcome. Chad is a new member to our FAC board, representing the Vancouver Police Department. And so we welcome you, and we'll probably do a little more official introduction here in a few minutes.
Okay, thank you.
Elma, here. Emily Estes, here. Dr. Dauphin,
here.
Dr. Trom,
here.
Lori Shaw,
here.
Laura Lynn Lore. And welcome, you're a new member tonight as well, representing the nurses, remember right? And so we want to welcome you to your first meeting.
Thank you.
Mark Collier.
Here.
Michael Watkins.
Here.
Paul Childers.
Here.
Robert Ferry.
Here.
I'm here. Scott Johnson.
Here.
Tracy Fernandez.
Here.
Tyler Clary.
Here.
Councilor Fuentes.
Standing in as Councilor
Yeah. Okay. Dr. Milne.
Here.
Jerry Preston.
Here.
Dr. Brianna De Silvia Batia. Did I say that right?
Yes.
And you're new tonight as well, and we want to welcome you and have more Dr. Milne go do your official introduction here in a few minutes, but welcome to your first meeting. I think that's it. Did I miss anyone? We do have someone from from the public, Wynn Gritch.
Gritch.
Okay. Welcome.
Thank you.
All right. Dr. Melnick, are you in a spot where you can do your introductions?
Yeah, I think I can. I got to swallow.
Well, let's do the minutes while you have a few more bites.
Oh, it's okay. I'm good.
Okay, we'll do that.
So I'm delighted to introduce our new Deputy Health Officer, Dr. Brianna De Silva Batia. And just to give you a couple of points about her, well, besides being our Deputy Health Officer here, she'll also be providing health officer services along with me for Skamania, McConaughey, and Pacific counties. She is board certified in internal medicine and has a master's degree in public health from the University of Washington. You know, the Washington state statutes require a health officer to be both a licensed physician as well as have a master's degree in public health. So she meets those qualifications and beyond, actually. But recently, Dr. De Silva Batia has been working as a hospitalist. And I have this here so I can remember where she's been, but she's on the medical staff at Peace Health, St. John's Medical Center, Peace Health Southwest Medical Center, Legacy Salmon Creek Medical Center, and Kaiser Sunnyside in Oregon. She's worked as a hospitalist. In addition, she's served as a COVID-19 health and policy strategist and medical advisor for research and investigations for an international nonprofit organization called Physicians for Human Rights. So she has some public health background there as well. Anyway, we're delighted to have her here. Well, unless you want me to share any of the personal stuff, I won't.
Hi everyone, happy to be here and meet you all.
As I said, we have some, we need to do the minutes before I forget those again. You should have all received the minutes in your email that Mallory sent out with the agenda. Does anybody have any additions or corrections to the minutes? Do I have a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Second. All right. All those in favor to pass the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, we've done the minutes. Okay, as far as other new members, like I said, we have Laura Lynn Lord, who is new. She's a practicing nurse in Clark County, and her acceptance letter should have gone through the council today, so we're going to welcome her to as a member. And do you have anything you want to share?
Happy to be here.
All right. And then our other new member is Chad Williams with Vancouver Police Department. And do you have anything we want to welcome you? You've just been appointed.
Nothing to add. I'm happy to be here as well.
Oh, great. All right. And let's see, what else do we have for? Oh, the educational position. We're still looking for someone for the educational position. So again, if anyone knows anybody or has a contact, I've got some, I've sent an email off to one of the schools to ask if there's someone there that would like to represent. But if anybody else has any insights or ideas, we're still looking for somebody. And I think it's been almost a year now that we've been looking for this position. So it's been one that we've had trouble filling. So the advertisement will stay through the end of this month. And if we don't have any applications by the end of this week, actually, then we'll be sending out another recruitment notice and we'll extend that period for a couple more weeks. So hopefully by our next meeting or the meeting after, we'll have some leads or some applicants. We'd really like to see an educational person on our board.
Did you say the same thing about the deputy director?
Yes,
that'd be good. We might have scooted over that. So
I did.
Well, it's my fault. You had me introduce Dr. De Silva Bhatia, and then I missed that part.
We're flexible tonight.
So Roxanne's last day, if you all remember Roxanne Wolf, our deputy director, was January 9th. And we're busy recruiting a deputy health officer, a deputy director, I'm sorry. Okay, my deputy is confused here. So we actually have several strong candidates, and we have interviews beginning next week. So there'll be two rounds of interviews. The first round will be with our leadership team, and actually our director of human resources will be participating as well, county director, HR director, and then I'm not sure how many of those will advance to the next round, but we will have a second round with some of our program managers from across the department. So I'm hoping, given the candidates we have, that we might, by the end of February, maybe have somebody identified or shortly after. So hopeful about that.
Great. Good news, bad news. I hated to see Roxanne go.
Roxanne was a huge loss, yeah.
Yeah, that's for sure. All right. So are we ready for our icebreaker? So tonight, last year we did this for some of you that were here last year, and tonight we're going to do an either-or kind of question. So I'll read a question, would you rather do this or this? And I'll say, if you want this, you go stand in this corner, and if you want that, you stand in this corner. And then amongst your group, you talk about why you selected that. And after about a minute or two, I'll read the next question. And so there's three, and then you would move from one side of the room to the other based on what your choice is. All right? And if you want to participate, as long as you can, be fine. So our first question is, would you rather live in a world without music or a world without colors? So if you'd like to live in a world without colors, you get to go to that corner over there. And if you'd like to live in a world without music, we're going to meet over here. Colors is over by the
I feel like I'm
music. Where are you without music?
Right here.
Without music.
Without music is here, and colors is over by the clock.
Rather be without music?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or do you want to live in a world of black and white?
Right. I don't know about that.
So there's black and white colors. That's the thing, it's black and white about music.
Music, colors.
So who wants to start? Why do you want to live in a world without music? And you guys have a final answer.
Why do you
want to live in a world
without
music?
It's not that I want to live in a world without music.
Prefer
that than a world without color.
4 years.
I can do without music. I mean, I don't listen to it a lot.
If
You can feel vibrations. You can feel vibrations of it if you can't hear.
Yeah, we do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anybody else?
I'm colorblind, but it is red, so I do see colors. In fact, actually, I see colors, or some colors, different than other people. But to me, it's like
that. No, it's your piano,
too, but I see color constantly from every single
day. I can figure it out. They can do it all, in terms of percussion.
I don't have either option.
Yeah.
I guess this is the...
If I had to have, you know, without rolling back, I had my eyes closed and listened.
I think this is the lesser of two.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I'm more of a visual person in order to...
I'm in the morning, so they're all just walking away with a lot.
I think it makes it interesting, so much diversity by having...
I don't have to be like...
Versus music.
It would save you a lot of money.
Vibrations that you can have in your head. I would say two colors.
It's easier on laundry, too.
Also not a... I'll sing, but not poorly. I mean, not well, so it doesn't stop me, but I think I really went on. That's how I'm coloring. Life, I got such a big part of it, easy to be over there.
Okay, time's up. Okay. All right. Would you rather end war or end poverty? So ending war is over there, ending poverty is over here.
End poverty or end war?
Give her a heavy version.
If you would rather in poverty.
That's wrong. I'm into social
good. All right. You took it down with this one. Why did you pick this one? Besides the fact you didn't want to walk over there.
Wars, there's a good chance poverty might be
the wars. That's a federal level. That's
that. Yeah.
Whether it happens or not.
Possible sequel.
I think my economics.
I have to have all of
might end a lot of wars.
Yeah. That's why I was like, it's the chicken or the egg, right? For poverty.
It is about power, but power and wealth relate to each other.
We have more reasons to the point. It is a spectrum.
So, you know, and there is truly a lot. We end up having to spend all of it
every day. And if everybody was happy, you
would be split.
That's time. All right. All right. Would you rather live under the sea or in space? So under the sea is over here, and space is over there.
Ta-da!
In the vacuum of space?
Yeah, we're still here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In space. Moving around in space. All right, under the sea or in the around the sea.
You guys are all way over there.
It's really close by.
Yeah, space is like how far you're short.
I don't like
seawater.
Yeah,
same here.
Yeah,
I figure either way without specialized equipment.
Michael, why do you want to
die?
Either way,
I'd rather lifeguard, seeing exhausted something, you all over at the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah, yeah, that's something.
Experience that too. So.
There's some interesting creatures.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just so beautiful.
Okay.
I have the concept of space is something interesting or whatever.
Honestly. No. Although I always think under the sea is warm, and there are some waters that are
really cool.
It's
cold.
It's absolute zero.
All right. We have one more.
Okay.
Would you rather be forced to dance every time you hear music, or be forced to sing along to any song you hear? So you have to dance to any music every time you hear a song, or you have to sing every time you hear a song.
Which
and dance is going to be over there, and singing is going to be
over there.
I can go either way.
It's easy.
You don't want to hear me sing, but you don't want to see me dance. Ugly either way.
I'm going to turn on the song and we have to start dancing.
Well, what's your definition of dancing?
Dancing could be good.
That's true, you can get away with it a bit easier.
So anybody have a reason why they don't want to sing other than the fact you can't?
I sing worse than I do these days.
It's more fun to watch.
Dr. Tron, why do you want to be in this group?
That's a good question.
Mark, what about you?
I've just never been able to sing.
I think we have all the numbers.
Yeah. All right, I think we're done.
Yep.
You can go back to your seats now.
Yes.
Your choice is to sit down. Yeah. At least for that
one. I thought there's no gluten-free or vegan.
Oh, no. Gluten-free. Well, thank you for going along with my crazy icebreaker ideas. I kind of wanted to get people up and kind of wiggle after eating, and so hopefully that did the trick.
Y'all finish with that?
Oh, thanks.
We're not having karaoke.
No,
we're not.
Well, obviously, because half of us don't sing.
No dance, dance,
no dancing.
No.
All right. At the last meeting, we had some conversation about membership and the fact that our membership cycles are all collecting into 1 year, to where we have a long, we have a lot of people that their terms end in the same year, and then we have a lot of people changing off of the council. And so the bylaws committee, which is Michael and Tyler and Marla, who's not here tonight, and myself, met, and we've come up with a proposal, of which I think Michael is going to describe to us and see what everybody thinks about that.
Yeah, so when we met, as Sandra has talked about, a lot of the term limits all ended in 1 year. And so trying to, I guess, narrow them down to in the 3 year period, we had 25, 26, and 27. And when we looked at the memberships, there was 1 year that was very heavy that I think over half the board would have left or would have been up for renewal. So almost all the positions except for three end September 30th of one of those 3 years. And then we have three positions that don't, which is the youth position, the tribal position, and the veterinarian position. So what we're, and those end, I can't remember the months, but they're, I think every one of them is a different month in the year 26. And so what we're proposing tonight is, at least with the two positions, the veterinarian position and the tribal position, is to extend those to 27, which would again kind of even out the 3 years a little bit, so we wouldn't be exactly having the same number that end their term on each of the years, but a little bit closer than what it is now. And the youth one we can talk about at a different meeting to kind of look at where that might fall to. I think that the goal is to move them to 27 and move them to September 30th so that we have everybody's terms ending on the same month at the same time. So one of those 3 years, and then would be in that 3 year cycle going forward. So that's kind of the proposal, is to, at least for tonight, we're recommending to move the two positions to 27, which right now they expire in 26. So.
Does the change you're recommending require a change in the bylaws as well?
No, I don't think so. So
that makes it easier.
The other part of that proposal is also that part of the issue is how long it takes us to replace that person. So think about the educational piece. And so when that person comes on, then we went 3 years from that date, which is what's starting to cause that problem. So the thought is that the membership committee would then contact a person whose term is to expire about 3 months prior to the expiration and ask what their intention is, if they're going to stay or if they're going to leave the council. And then we would have time to do recruitment if they were going to leave. And then also that their term would start at and end at the same time it would have originally. Does that make sense? So, and those things, we're thinking about putting a procedural document together that would be attached to the bylaws. So it would be procedures for the membership committee or for the council that don't have to be in the bylaws to be changed or voted on every time. But it's more about how we operate as opposed to a bylaw. So anybody have any questions or comments? Or yes?
Just curious, so is it, if somebody's interested in staying on the council, that they are granted an extension?
Yes.
Or, oh, interesting.
Yeah,
different structure than most of our committees.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Is there a max number of years then you have to go up, or not?
There is not.
Okay.
That is on the table for the membership committee to discuss in the coming year, but we have a lot of other things going on. We wanted to get this clarified first before we started looking at terms.
I guess my impression is that we were appointed by like the county councilors, so it was, if they didn't want us, we weren't allowed to.
That is true, and I guess I misspoke a little bit in that if the person wants to continue, then we put their name forward to be reappointed, of which then the council says yes or no, so I did.
The non-vacancy is not advertised or anything, though. If the person is interested in staying,
correct, then we put it forward. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I don't believe we need to vote on this. The people involved, Dr. Doppin and Michael, have agreed to that. So,
thank you.
No problem. So thank you for that. I think that makes it so that about one third of the council's terms expire every year, so it's a little more even than having 12 people expiring in the same year. All right, moving forward, Tyler, along with the membership committee, Michael and myself and Marla, has been working on the slate of officers, and so Tyler's gonna present the slate of officers for this next year. And we'll need to vote on that.
So per the bylaws, at the beginning of the first meeting of this year, we're supposed to vote on a slate of candidates for the executive committee. So we have the chair role, the vice chair role, and an at-large role. So currently the vice chair role and the chair role, that's a two-year term for those positions, and they're both up for re-election or reappointment. Currently, and then the at-large position is a one-year role. So basically what we have is we have a slate of candidates. Unfortunately, we don't have anybody that has jumped up and down for the at-large role. We thought we had somebody that was interested, but it turns out that they couldn't end up doing it. So again, that's a one-year role. If anybody is interested in that, you can jump up and down right now if you want and raise your hand and say you're interested, and we'd be happy to put you on the list of candidates, slate of candidates for tonight, and we can vote on it tonight if you're interested in that. And then the two other roles, which are the two-year terms, are the chair role, which Sandy's currently in, and she has graciously indicated that she's willing to stay in that role, which she has done a fantastic job of. If there's anybody else that's interested, I think you could still, you know, put your name in the hat and take a vote. And then for the vice chair role, Emily has put her name in the hat, so I'm very thankful for that. Similarly, if somebody else is interested in that role, they can put their name in. But we'd love, if you are interested, we'd rather you go in at-large role first. So what we'll have to do is basically do a, they'll have to leave the room. Is anybody interested in the at-large role, putting their name in the hat? Anyone? No? Okay. So we will have to figure something out there. See if we can find somebody that's interested. And if you want more information on that, then please reach out. Sandy can definitely give you more information on that than I could in terms of what the specifics of the role are. But it is a little bit less, you know, less of a requirement than the other roles, just because it's a 1-year term for one thing. And then it's not quite as extensive as what
it's Sandy's. Not a hard job. We have one executive meeting a month for about an hour to develop the agenda and talk about what's going on with FAC and what we need to discuss. And then we have a facilitators meeting for about 20 minutes a few days before the meeting. And that's it, unless we have some special things that come up that we need to have conversation about. But basically, it's about an hour and a half a month outside of this meeting. So it's not a lot, unless, like I said, that there's some things that we need to do behind the scenes. But that doesn't come up, has not come up too often at this point. So.
Okay.
I'll throw my
name.
Someone else interested?
Can you
volunteer?
I'll volunteer. Yay! I was going to just say that, you know, we can work on accommodating schedules and all that to make it easier. So, yeah.
Whoever is voted in as the executive committee kind of determines what is the best time for the meetings, the exec meetings, but they're usually by Zoom, and so you don't have to go anywhere. So it's really enjoyable. I've enjoyed my time. I also am willing to share if someone wants to share. Don't get me wrong. All right, thank you, Lori.
Yeah, thank you. So with that, I guess we'll have to ask the three candidates to leave the room, and then we'll vote on it.
And when we come back, will there be all the desserts by our...
So we'll do the consensus voting again. So presenting the three different candidates. So Sandy Brown for the chair role, Emily Estes for the vice chair role, and then Lori Schott. Thank you for the at-large position. So I think this is the second time we've done a consensus vote. So I think what we do is we go around, everybody has to say yes. Yes, you can live with it. So there's four, I think. Maybe we should steal the bylaws. I don't need to bring the bylaws. I think there's yes, definitely yes. There's yes, I can live with it. There's no, I need more information. And then there's no way, no how. So with that, I'm just going to go through the list of people that I have here, and you can just say what you say, what your vote is for the three candidates. Chad Williams.
Yes.
Elma Bloom.
Yes.
Dr. Dauphin.
Yes.
Okay, Dr. Trump.
Yes.
Laura Lynn.
Yes.
Mark.
Yes.
Michael.
Yes.
Paul.
Yes.
Robert.
Yes.
Scott.
Yes.
Tracy.
Yes.
I vote yes. Did I get everyone?
Yes.
All right. Yes. I'll go get them and tell them. You want to read them? All right, great. Do we have to? Then we don't move to. That's it, right? For the consensus vote.
Yeah.
It's all new. Well, two of you were lucky, and we voted you in. The other one, no. Thank you all for volunteering. We all greatly appreciate it, and you have been approved.
Well, thank you for your vote of confidence. It's for sure.
Congratulations.
All right. Public comment.
I just found out about you guys tonight.
and someone called up and said to come, and I wanted to go to the health board in Clark County because I have a few things to say to Dr. Melnick. And one of the things, too, is that I'm going to put a lot of stuff on public record, and I hope you all read it, because I hope that our next pandemic, which Gates is telling us it's going to be soon again, that we handle it differently. And also, too, is that this mask thing was a bunch of baloney, and we never heard from Dr. Melnick that it was over, and we still have people wearing masks because they've been so frightened for the last 3 years. Not two, but three. And one thing that's very important is that this book, this is Naomi Wolf's book on the Pfizer papers, and you all need to see this because yesterday I went to the school board meeting and I was showing them what the shots that they gave their kids are going to do. And if any of you took these shots, look at it. This, I remember distinctly because I came from San Francisco, and when Fauci gave everybody all the, he asked for promiscuous homosexuals to take the hepatitis B shot and gave them AIDS. Then he told them to take AZT and he killed most of them. And I was a hairdresser, so everybody I worked with died. And when I would go to hair shows, all the people that did the demonstrations, they all died of AIDS. And this is what it looked like. This is Kaposi sarcoma, those purple marks. And this kid just took a COVID shot and he's 22, and look at his legs.
I apologize, your time is up.
Well, my time is up. Well, you want to pass the book around and just look at it real quick because I want to take it home. But I'm going to put a lot of stuff on public record, and I hope that you're all interested in looking at this. I was the water lady in the Bay Area, and this stuff's in the water.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Next agenda item is Dr. Melnick's update on respiratory illness.
Well, thank you. So I'm just going to, Tracy can add to what I'm going to say, being she's at East Health Southwest. So we're still in the flu season. So the flu season is defined as two more consecutive weeks when the percentage of influenza tests that are positive is greater or equal to 10%. So during the last week that we have data, because it takes a while to update it, that was the week of January 12th to 18th, 21%, around 21% of influenza tests were positive. That's the seventh week. We've been in the flu season for 7 weeks now. The good news is that and again, the data is preliminary. We clean it up as we, you know, evaluate it, make sure it's as accurate as it possibly can be. This marks, the good news is that it's the third week where positivity has been dropping. So it peaked at about 36% at the end of December. So in the previous 2 weeks, 26 to 28% of tests were positive. Now we're down to 21%. The emergency department visits and hospitalizations due to influenza remain elevated, but believe it or not, they've been decreasing over the last 3 weeks. I don't know if Tracy, you may want to argue that. You have more direct information. The data we have, again, our data is not quite up to date on this, so things can change. The last week of data that we had was January 12th to 18th, so Tracy's got more recent experience. 4.6% of emergency department visits were due to influenza, which is down from 5.7% the previous week. And 3.6% of hospitalizations were due to influenza, which was down from 5.3% the previous week. That's still pretty significant when you figure that one in 30, actually more than 1 in 30 hospitalizations are due to that one cause. They're both higher, both emergency department visits and hospitalizations are higher now than they were for influenza this time last year. The other good news is COVID-19 and RSV, respiratory syncytial virus activity, continues to be low. So for the most recent week that I just mentioned, there were zero hospitalizations for COVID-19 and only 0.4% of ED visits were due to COVID-19. And in terms of RSV, 0.6% of hospitalizations and 0.8% of emergency department visits were due to RSV.
The good news is that we have vaccines against each one of these. These are all vaccine-preventable diseases. The bad news is that vaccination rates are low, and the rates in Clark County are lower than the statewide rate. So just to give an example, 16.1% of Clark County residents have received the updated COVID-19 vaccine compared to 17.1% statewide, which isn't great either. 25.4% of Clark County residents have received this year's flu vaccine, compared to about 27.7% statewide. When you think of all these hospitalizations that we're having, and I think that 3/4 of Clark County residents have not received a flu vaccine, it's just kind of mind-boggling to me. 38% of adults 75 and older in Clark County have received the RSV vaccine, compared to 40% statewide. The other good news is it's not too late to get vaccinated. Influenza, the season's not over. It can go on for, a couple of months at least. It takes 14 weeks to build up immunity after getting the vaccine, so you'll get protected for that period of time. And with COVID-19, it's kind of hard to predict because it doesn't follow a seasonal pattern like RSV and COVID and influenza. So the vaccines are still the best protection against not only getting infected, but also against severity, including hospitalizations and deaths. We have vaccine that prevents against RSV. I mentioned the older adults. Also, people who are 32 to 36 weeks pregnant should get the vaccine if their child is going to be born during the RSV season. There's monoclonal antibodies available for infants to protect them during the RSV season. So of course, still makes sense to stay home when you're sick, keep sick children home from school, continue to consider masking in crowded indoor spaces, especially if you or somebody you live with. I mean, one of the reasons we get vaccinated is not only to protect ourselves, but to protect people that we live with that may be at more risk for severe illness. Wash hands frequently, cover coughs and sneezes. You all know about this stuff. Clean and disinfect commonly touched surfaces. Avoid spending time with people who are sick. So I want to also mention that there's another a vaccine-preventable disease that we're seeing huge increase of, and it's a respiratory illness. The medical term for it is pertussis. We all know it as whooping cough. In 2023, the entire year, we had 14 cases, 1-4 cases. In 2024, we had 577 cases of whooping cough. We had 4 hospitalizations, fortunately no deaths. Most of the cases were among children who are unvaccinated or undervaccinated. So over half of the cases, 50%, so you get the whooping cough vaccine, the pertussis vaccine, there are multiple doses over time, and I'll go over the schedule with you, but over half of the cases we had not even received one dose of the vaccine. 58% were, if you included unvaccinated plus people not up to date, that gets you up to 58%. One of the nasty thing about this, of those 577 cases, 11% were in infants younger than 1 year of age, 65 cases. And whooping cough can be deadly in infants. Children ages 1 to 9 made up the largest percentage of cases, more than half, 53%. Give you the same thing that's been happening in Clark County has been happening in the state as well. So 87 cases in the state of Washington last year, I mean the year before, 2023. Over 2,000, okay, go from 83 to 2,040 cases in the state of Washington through December 28th of 2024. We are the poster child for the county with the highest number of cases. Our 577 beat out every county in the state, including King County. And we have the third highest rate, 110.2 cases per 100,000. Whitman and Ponderai counties had higher rates. So as of, I don't have the January numbers for you yet, but the highest months were October, November. We had 118 cases October alone and 102 in November. We still had 69 in December. We're still, you know, schools back in session and all that. We're still, I don't know what the numbers are for this month, but this can go on for a while, especially with the immunization rates that we have. So that was the other piece of gloomy news I wanted to share with everybody. I don't know, Tracy, if you want to talk about what you're seeing in the emergency rooms.
Yeah, no, those numbers are about right. We have lots of flu, lots of really sick people with flu. And yeah, we have no room at the end, basically last week or so. We've been boarding patients. We did a public service announcement in the news to try to tell people to go to urgent care if they can, because we're just overrun pretty much. And the problem is too, is that our caregivers get sick as well. So then we're short caregivers and we have a lot of patients. So, and we've seen pertussis as well. So it's all the things that he said that can confirm in real life.
A couple questions. What is the diagnostic test for RSV? Is there a test for it?
There's a test for it, yeah.
What is it?
I'm trying to remember, it's PCR.
Yeah. PCR? Okay.
Polymerase chain reaction, for those of you, it's kind of like a genetic test, yeah.
And we may have touched on this last year when you started seeing measles cases crop up again, but I remember getting vaccinated for DTP, which is now Tdap, every year before I went to school. It was required.
Yeah, it's still required for school as well. It's one of the requirements. But people get exemptions, so you can get exemptions. So you might recall when we had the large measles outbreak in 2019, it seems like a century ago, we had 71 cases. That actually, so in Washington State, there's a number of vaccines that are required for school, but there's you can get a medical exemption, although those are really rare. You can get a religious exemption, that's pretty rare also, or should be. And then you can get what's called a philosophic exemption. You can choose, you know, for whatever reason not to. A lot of people would use that if they got their, waited until the last minute and they wanted to get their kid in class, and so they would use a philosophic exemption. We, after the measles outbreak, we were able to get a bill passed that removed the philosophic exemption for MMR vaccine. It was a great effort. It was bipartisan. Representative Stoniere and Representative Harris. So we had a D and an R. It was great. Sponsored that bill and moved it through. And that was, so you can't get a philosophic exemption for the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, but you can get it for the other vaccines as well. And actually, if you want to, if you're really interested, you can go on the state dashboard and we can get you that information. You can actually see the immunization rates by school building in the county. You can get down and put your clicker over a school building and actually see both. You can look at the rates through kindergarten rate as well as the K through 12 rate. And you can do that by school building. You can also do it by county.
Yeah, have we been keeping any record on bird flu?
There have been, I probably should talk about that a little bit. That's another reason to get vaccinated for seasonal flu, because one of the concerns that we have is if we have people who get infected with highly pathogenic avian influenza, at the same time you get infected with seasonal flu, the viruses can mix their genetic material with each other. And the concern is, you know, there's a potential here, and HPAI has a much higher mortality rate for the few human cases that we've had, that far higher than COVID-19, which is significantly higher than influenza. So an HPAI pandemic would be a real disaster. So I think there have been, just off the top of my head, I don't have my notes with me, I think there have been I think there have been 66 cases US-wise, and something like 13. I don't want to give inaccurate numbers in the state of Washington. I think here, I don't think we've had any dairy cows here. It's mostly birds and bird exposures. But
some dairy cow exposure in California, quite a bit there. And
Well, you got me going on this. there's another reason to not drink raw milk.
Right.
So I think pasteurization was developed to prevent tuberculosis, which it does do, if I remember correctly. But it also kills the avian influenza virus. So and cows can spread it through, dairy cows can spread it through milk. So besides getting things like Estec, E. coli from raw milk, you can also get avian influenza from unpasteurized milk.
Is that the primary pathway that we've had to humans so far?
I'm sorry, what?
Is that the primary pathway it's getting to humans so far?
From exposure, so there hasn't been any, from what I'm last on it, look, human-to-human transmission that's been documented. Right now, it's still birds or, you know, cattle, animals to human.
It's been farmwalkers so far.
What was that?
He had asked if raw milk was why we had had cases so far, and it's been.
Oh, that's what you're asking in humans? Yeah. I'm not aware of that.
It has paid havoc with the egg industry. I mean,
oh, the cost of eggs.
Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy.
Cook the eggs too.
Yeah.
I mean, I historically have liked eggs over easy. I shouldn't be saying that in a public health. I don't do that anymore. Yeah. Cook your eggs.
Is it only through the milk, or is it could be through uncooked beef, not fully cooked beef as well?
I don't know about uncooked beef. I know that, you know, cows get respiratory symptoms. Have you looked at that or at all? I haven't heard it from uncooked beef.
I don't know.
Just FYI, there are cases in Oregon and now one in Washington, I believe, of pet cats.
Oh, the cat, yeah, so
raw food.
So cats, so yeah, other animals can get this, and theoretically they could transmit to us as well. So there have been cats and dogs with avian influenza. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in Oregon, it was a cat that ate, it was raw product that the cat mm-hmm. ate.
And it was an indoor cat with no exposure anywhere. It was the Oregon Health Department determined through a lot of testing that this cat got it from the food. It was raw food.
So you're more of an expert on this than I am, because
and not milk. Because you know,
I should be calling on you instead of yakking about it.
Yeah, and there was another case, I believe, in Oregon, where the cat was given raw milk.
Yeah, and so I was wondering if it was milk. Yeah.
Yeah, it's transmissible too. Yeah. Yeah, is there anything you want to add that I left out?
I have some other things about animals and humans, but not related to avian influenza.
We can talk all about zoonotic
disease.
We've seen it here.
Yeah.
We even had avian chlamydiosis here.
Oh, wow.
We had an outbreak at a finch farm many years ago, 10 years ago. That causes psittacosis, which can be pneumonia in humans. So, anyway.
Well, I like to keep you updated if I come across anything in the veterinary field that is a potential zoonotic or transmissible to human risk. And in the last month or so, by the way, I missed the last couple meetings because I was really sick with COVID for the third time.
Sorry.
I know, it sucked, despite 5 vaccines. I know. So I meant to say this at the last meeting, but it's still happening. These two things I've seen fairly frequently. One is ringworm, which is not a worm, it's a fungus. Lots of cats and a dog that came in with this. Cats are notorious for this, rabbits as well, but every once in a while you get a dog with it too. And the people in the family also had lesions, pink circles, so it's definitely a zoonotic thing that I'm seeing more of now than I have in the last 5 years, except for when I worked with rabbits. Second thing is scabies, also a skin problem. It's a burrowing mite that causes I'm not sure what it does on humans exactly, but you'll know. But it causes hair loss and scabs, hence the name scabies. And the people in the family were mostly the children were affected, and it's an itchy rash that they found at their waistband, anytime there's tight, you know, clothing, but I suppose it can be anywhere on the family. So I just wanted to make you all aware of that. Lots of scabies.
In terms of the cats, that was a good reason to keep them inside, especially if they like to mess with wild birds, which they do.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There's no vaccines for ringworm for
okay. No. There are good tests for it. Lots of several different types of testing for it, and there's reasonable treatment.
Can you look at it
with a woods lamp?
Woods lamp, yeah.
Yeah, it depends. There are 5 species of common ringworm, and 2 of them fluoresce very vividly under a woods lamp. The other 3 do not, so you need one of the other tests for the other 3. If it doesn't fluoresce, doesn't mean it's not ringworm. If it does, you know it's one of these 2 microsporum canis. Yeah.
So fast. It's great to have a veterinarian.
All right. Anything else? If not, we're going to move on to the Board of Health and VAC retreat planning. Dr. Elnick,
I think we're still, well, you've been going, you guys have been meeting, haven't you, to plan the retreat, or not yet?
The planning meeting group has been meeting, yeah. As far as I know.
So, yeah, so just in terms of timing, I got a request, and you might be aware of it, to maybe do the retreat in February, Michelle Fenning from your office. But I feel like we're not ready for that yet, so I sent a response back. I'm hoping late March, the earliest, or maybe April, and for the Board of Health in February, given that we have new members, we wanted to go over a whole presentation about the statutes, the role of the Board of Health and the health officer and that and all that, to get everybody ready for the retreat. So that's kind of where we're at now, but that's about what I have to report.
I think that there'll be something coming out soon to all of us as members, as well as the Board of Health, to try to find a date that would be applicable. But again, probably late March, early April.
And I didn't bring the, I probably should have brought the draft agenda for the retreat, which we have.
I think they're not quite ready to share that, but almost ready to share that. But it'll be a good portion of the day, probably 5 or 6 hours. Over lunchtime, and be time for us to interact with the Board of Health and have lots of questions about how we want to move forward with our relationship with the Board of Health and then with us, and what are some issues that we need to deal with. So it should be a really good retreat and good timing to do that, and that's why we want to make sure that both the Board of Health and the FAC are really ready to do that and move forward with that. And I think waiting until March would be more helpful, so we can really have all the ducks in a row, if you will, once without any flu.
Please, no ducks.
No ducks.
So once we hear back from Michelle, I will send out a poll with dates for both March and April, so that Board of Health and FAC members can vote on what day works best for them. It should be about 6 hours in length. We're guessing from around 9 to 3 p.m., so that on the radar, and watch for emails from me.
We always do. All right, great. Now's the time for any member updates, and you started with yours. That's okay, no problem. But do any other members have any updates from any organizations you work with or who you represent or anything out in the community that you want to update us with?
Maybe one.
Okay.
This Wednesday, a new pet urgent care place is opening in Vancouver, which is sorely needed. We have the ERs, we have 3 of them, 3 good ERs, and we have regular practices, but we have an urgent care place over on McGillivray, right in the same parking lot as the Fred Meyer on 164th. It's in the same building as Cascade Park Veterinary Hospital. They're open from like 4 p.m. to midnight every day. Not ER prices for animals that don't need ER, but just need some care that can't really wait. So, but I
don't
know.
Good to know.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
How long is the line?
Hasn't opened yet, so I don't know the answer to that. Well, it opens on Wednesday.
It's probably already forming.
It's probably already people waiting, yeah. I know.
Did you say that's every day or just one day?
It's every day, 7 days a week. As far as I know, they may change that when they open, but it's supposed to open on Wednesday from, I think, 4 p.m. to midnight. Subject to change.
Okay. Anybody else? Good for the cause. All right. Well, I kind of wanted to, this is something I brought up at the exec meeting, and we did this last year, and kind of review where we were in 2024. What were some of the accomplishments of FAC? Because we kind of do our business every month, and then we move on to the next month. And sometimes it's nice to kind of know what were some of our accomplishments or what were some of the things that we did last year. So Mallory helped go through all of our minutes to kind of see what we did and kind of pull out some of the high points. And Dr. Melnick's going to help me with this if I miss something. So, but the first thing I have on the list is that we did preview the Community Health Improvement Plan, or the CHIP plan, and we engaged the first in January and February. We engaged in a lot of conversations and discussions about how we might be able to help move that CHIP forward, or how are some things that we could help with policies or connections with partnerships and so on. So it was good to learn about that. We haven't moved much further than that because they're still working on the CHIP plan, but at least we got to hear that and be part of those discussions so that now it's moving forward. And I'm sure we'll have more of that work for 2025. We reviewed our FAC goals, what were the themes that we could see in our goals, and what was the criteria we wanted to use to select those goals. And so we started working on a decision-making matrix for deciding on those goals and how we were going to move forward, as well as a decision-making matrix and racial equity framework. So making sure that the decisions that we make, in fact, fit that decision-making model and the racial equity framework as well. So that kind of took a couple of months' work to come up with that. And now we're just waiting to hear back from public health on how we're going to move forward with making those decisions, or is there something that we need to move forward? But at least we have a matrix to work with in making those decisions, and that was a lot of good work. We focused on the scope of work with the Board of Health relationship because we wanted to move that forward. And as you just heard, we have moved that forward. We have a committee that's working with the Board of Health, and that there will be a retreat in 2025. So that's a really great accomplishment that we're going to see come to fruition here in a couple of months. The other big thing is we worked on the bylaws change, so we really had a lot of conversation about our decision-making process, and we were using Robert's Rules of Order for many years, and decided that we wanted to move to a consensus model. So we had a committee that worked on developing the consensus model and how we would use that consensus model, and we now have that as, we made a bylaws change in August that we moved to using a consensus method of making decisions, which you probably used for the vote for the slate of officers. The only thing that we don't use that for is to approve the minutes, and we'll still use Robert's Rules for that. But otherwise, we use a consensus method, which is now written into our bylaws. We also partnered with the Commission on Aging, Community Development, and Public Health in looking at their aging readiness plan that they've had. And we have been working with Public Health has now been trying to make a crossroads to see where there's things within Clark County Public Health and their readiness plan that they can work on, or that we can help support working on helping them meet those goals that they have in their readiness program. So we're hoping that in this year that we'll see that crossroads work, so that then we can start to support those partnerships and trying to help the Commission on Aging move their readiness program forward. Let's see, we did that one already. And we reviewed the environmental public health fee ordinances, as well as looking at the budget overall. And we've been, Jeff's been very successful and has a very good working group. And I thank you all that are on that budget committee and working with him on the budget process. And there'll be more work to come in 2025 and 2026 for sure. But I think Jeff isn't here, but I'm sure that he's very thankful for the work that you guys do in helping him through that. And also just helping understand how that budget process works, because it's not just, you know, put a budget down on paper and put it forth. So there's a lot of work and a lot of pieces to that. So really want to thank the group that's on that committee for the work that they're doing. What did I miss?
I don't think you missed anything. You know, the other point I make about the budget process and the fees is ultimately the Board of Health passes the fees. But given the statutory change in terms of the role of the Public Health Advisory Council, that work in terms of looking at the budget, making recommendations, the Board of Health is clearly part of your purview, and I think that helps a whole lot because you get diverse input to the Board of Health in terms of making those final decisions on the fees. So the other thing that I think we spent some time reviewing, and we made some presentations, and we've been doing it with the Board of Health as well, is taking a look at some of the opioid morbidity and mortality data, as well as the healthy survey data. And I think coming sometime this spring, I know we'll be doing it for the Board of Health and probably have something for FACT as well, discussion with the with our treatment community in terms of how to, you know, now that we've gotten some data on morbidity, mortality, and youth risk, that we'll have more of a robust discussion with our treatment providers about how they're working to address this. So I'm looking forward to that conversation sometime this spring. And you'll all be included in that as well.
I think that the presentations, and I didn't mention all of them, but every month we've had a presentation about a project or something that public health is working on, and it's been very helpful and insightful for us to understand that, so that if we can share with our constituents out in the community, or we can bring information back from our constituents around those issues to help public health understand something that they might not see. And that's the whole reason for us, is that whole multiplier event effect of being able to work with our constituents and then bring back that information based on what we know is, and there's a lot going on within public health, so it's really helpful to have those presentations and get a better understanding of what you're working on, so, and where you might need the help of our group. So, but I just want to thank everybody on FACT for all your participation and coming, and willingness to be on committees is really important, and the little bit of work that you do on a committee makes a big difference within the group, so I appreciate everybody's ability to do that, stepping forward when you can. Other comments? Things that you might have remembered that we did that we didn't highlight.
The lead presentation was very good. Mm-hmm. The lead testing one, that was one of the most more memorable, mm-hmm. Really informative ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a, for those of you who may have been there, we have a XRF machine. So historically, it's kind of like a mass spectrophotometer that you can just point at something or to see whether there's lead contains lead. So we've had lead is a notifiable condition, and we've had a number of cases of people with elevated lead levels, particularly kids. And lead's kind of like a silent killer, even fairly low lead. It doesn't belong in the body, and it can cause irreversible cognitive loss in kids. It affects the brain. But sometimes it's really hard to figure out, you know, where the exposure is occurring. Commonly, historically, it's been in lead paint. And even finding it in lead paint, you have to get multiple chips and do multiple samples, because it may, you know, depending on how it's distributed. But we've had cases where we've been unable to figure that out. And one of the risk factors is cookware, for example. But it's really hard to get a sample, and you'd have to get multiple samples. With this machine, you can just point at it and see whether there's potential risk for lead exposure. It's kind of funny. I don't remember where they were doing. We had a meeting with some of our legislators, and we're talking about foundational public health services and lead and our how we address lead. And one of the people there had a coffee container, and actually we're able to point the machine at it, and it had elevated levels of lead. So there's more of it around than you may want to think about. So I don't want to scare everybody, but it's a really useful tool, and you can, you know, you don't have to get multiple samples, and it's really accurate. So
I know, Seattle Public Health actually has like a couple days a year where they'll do lead testing days, and you can bring things in and they'll scan it with that. Do we, like, if somebody were to reach out to Clark County Public Health and say, hey, can you check this thing for me? Because I'm concerned because I got it from my, you know, aunt in another country. Like, is that a thing that
we do? We have our environmental public health.
Oh, cool.
Somebody else has suggested that before, too. Yeah. You. And you know, we have that ending balance thing of equipment. You know, we could get another one too, of course. So we haven't done that. I guess demand didn't get too high, we could.
Well, my husband scraped all of the paint off of our bathroom door while I was out of town, and I used one of the cheap ones, and I went, oh, I think we have a problem. So you bring it in.
I worked for the Department of Environmental Quality in Oregon. Residents would bring in, you know, asbestos to the lab, check that, friable.
Not a great idea to mess with asbestos.
I'm just saying, it's service.
Want to leave it in its place. Anyway.
I only bring that up as some sort of service that we could, I don't know how much we want to, you know, like you said, a day a year.
We still need to be screening kids for lead. Mm-hmm. It doesn't replace screening kids. But anyway, it's not a bad idea.
They did it with... It was with one of the Child Lead Act grants from the government that they did it, and I think that they just kept it up afterwards. It was twice a year.
Where's that at?
Seattle Public Health. Seattle.
I know that when we discussed that previously and resources was an issue, but one of the things that could be considered would be to only use it or allow it to be used for things that people cannot do in other ways. Like asbestos, you can take it to places, have it checked. Lead, you can get lead abatement, or not abatement, but lead testing kits and things like that. But you can't test a cast iron pot, for example. So those would be, the public benefit. That would be well worth the resource spent on.
And that's what we found in this one family where we had a kid with elevated lead levels. We found it in their cookware, right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that would have been really difficult, and it had gone undetermined
for
a long time. Yeah. And kids were continuously being
exposed. After that story, I literally, because my wife cooks religiously on cast iron, and I'm kind of like, but I have no way of testing. So that to me would be a real large public benefit if somehow we could figure that out. Excellent.
Thank you for giving me more anxiety. I really appreciate
that. It's supposed to be information you can use.
Whenever I feel good about my life, I come here, we talk about seeds and lead. It balances things out, so I appreciate that.
The nice thing is that there are some things you can do. The nice thing is that I live with this stuff all the time, but prevention is the way to go.
Okay, anything else you want to talk about?
Can I ask one quick follow-up question? You had mentioned the ethical objection to vaccines that Monica Stonier and Paul Harris had.
You mean the philosophic?
The philosophic, for MMR. Have you heard any rumblings or undercurrent of any such effort regarding the Tdap?
That hasn't been discussed. I don't know that it's been discussed in the legislature.
Okay.
Unfortunately, vaccines have become controversial. So
yes,
it's one of the best interventions we, as a physician, looking over a few hundred years of medicine. It's one of the best things we've ever done.
Preaching to the choir.
Yeah, we do a lot better job keeping our cats and dogs up to date. It's amazing how we, you send out messages, veterinarians send out messages, and we keep them up to date, but we don't do as great a job with people. Yeah.
It's, especially since the pandemic, it became so glaring to me, the difference, is I have clients that come in after getting a postcard from us, right, and they'll say, oh, he's due for rabies and parvo, and they'll come in and they're very vocal about being anti-vaxxers, but they're there with their dogs. It just doesn't make any sense.
I know. But one of the reasons we vaccinate dogs and cats is to protect us.
Us against rabies, absolutely. I don't.
All right.
Well, I had a comment on vaccines. I can remember going, we got them when we were at the school itself, mm-hmm. where the public health nurse would come.
Yeah.
And it seems like that was a very good way to do it, and that's just not the way it's done anymore. I mean, parents were informed what day it was, and you lined up. And
yeah, good old days.
But yeah, I'm from California, and they didn't allow a whatever exemption. I don't believe in an exemption.
Washington has a more lax program.
Okay. Yeah, I grew up in California too.
Yeah, they didn't allow that at all.
No exemption. No.
You got your shot.
You got your shot, and then you can go to school.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or no school.
Or no school.
Or no school.
Okay.
I don't remember my numbers correctly. Kids used to kill 500 kids every year in the U.S. and like 50,000 hospitalizations. We just don't see that stuff.
What was it? Sorry.
I think if I remember my numbers correctly, I'm going to double check that. You can look it up. Measles, I believe, killed about 500 kids every year in the 50,000 hospitalizations before the vaccine was available. People don't remember back that far. I mean, they don't remember polio either. So we got
to remember polio.
Was polio the one that gave you that weird scar on your arm?
No, that's smallpox.
Oh, okay.
Smallpox.
So one of them gave you the
I've had arm. I've had the smallpox.
Me too.
Polio was young.
Okay. People don't remember smallpox had like a 30% mortality rate. And it's been, we could have wiped out measles from the world by now. We've wiped out smallpox through the vaccine. We've gotten close to polio, but it's making a comeback. But measles, we got reasonably close, and then we dropped the ball on that, too. And so we don't need that smallpox vaccine anymore because vaccine wiped it out. Mm-hmm. Doesn't exist in nature anymore.
Nice.
Anyway, sorry, I'm blabbering.
All right. Well, if we have more conversation, adjourn our meeting. You're welcome to stay and have more conversation if you'd like. Our next meeting is on February 25th, and it will be virtual, so you'll be getting some information from Mallory on the Zoom link and the agenda and all. So have a great month.
If any of you want to see my book,